Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Eli Craig's 2010 film Tucker and Dale vs. Evil. Wait, I know, we effed with you guys again. Longtime listeners will know that we've done this like maybe once or twice before in the past. Last week, we announced that we were actually going to be watching A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints this weekend. That is because the website that I regularly frequent to tell me what movies are available on Netflix Instant lied to me this week. A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints is not on Netflix Instant. We just realized this morning when both Tyler and I were going to watch the movie, so we had to make a last-minute adjustment. Forgive us, good people. Sorry about that. That's all I'm going to say.
Good person.
Yes, because we only have one listener. All right. Well, joining me is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Good God, Larry Hagman. It's called retirement for a reason. You don't have to work anymore. You know that guy was in I Dream of Jeannie in like the 60s?
I do, yeah.
Oh, man.
You're referring to the,
the Dallas reboot?
Yeah, resuscitation of Dallas as a TV series, which,
yeah.
I mean, I never watched the original show, but because Larry Hagman is in it, I assume it's like a continuation of the original show.
Oh, it has to be.
Yeah.
Patrick Duffy's in it, too.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I'm just fighting for his right to stay at home and not do anything.
Well, I don't know if you saw... I know you're a big fan of The Soup. I think you were who got me to watch The Soup in the first place a few years ago, and now I'm a big fan of that show as well. But they made fun of that a little bit. They had... I think Larry Hagman was on The View or something, yeah. And they were like, why is it... Or did you think it was really a good idea to come back and star on Dallas? And he's like, my accountant did. So I thought that was a pretty bold answer, pretty honest answer.
Yeah, he's in his old age. He can say whatever he wants.
He's pretty old, and it's not like he's doing tough work there. I'm sure they're taking care of him. So.
Oh, yeah. You know he's getting taken care of.
Indeed. All right, well, if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. Please do.
Do we have any this week, Ben?
What?
Do we have any this week?
No, we don't. No. Or you can email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, and you can find this in every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, Tyler, I have the character name game for you.
Oh, do you? Sweet.
Yes, it's one name, so...
Ah, yes.
It's going to be tough.
Wait, is it Goose, or what was his name in Top Gun?
Oh, who?
Who's Tom Cruise's name in Top Gun? Maverick?
Maverick, no. Kazansky, I think his name was something Kazansky, but
I thought you were gonna say the character name game is Kazam.
No, that would be sweet. We still have to watch that, by the way.
It's on video on demand on Comcast, so it might be video on demand everywhere. So
I think it might be on Netflix Instant. I'm not sure about
definitely.
That.
We'll have Mazer on for Kazam/Steel if we can get a hold of Steel.
Yeah, that's one of the episodes that we've been like planning since the inception of this podcast, and we've been just like patiently waiting for Kazam and Steel to come on Netflix Watch Instantly so we can do a double feature. But
and for Shaquille O'Neal to come onto our show.
Right, of course.
Hey, what's going on, guys? You got any crunch around here?
Okay, so, wow, man, he hasn't done a crunch commercial in like 20 years.
Dude, that one where he splits California off of the contiguous United States just stuck with me for years. I think that was like 12 years ago.
That's like a Lex Luthor plot if I've ever heard one. So I was mistaken. I'm looking on Netflix Instant right now, and Kazam is available on DVD, but not streaming. So
anyway. I think it might be on VOD.
One of these days, we'll get around to that one. So
I'll check my local cable package.
Yes. All right. So the character name game for this week is Blake.
Blake.
Blake. So think about that. You'll have to come back and guess what movie that character is from, keeping in mind, of course, there has to be some sort of tenuous connection to a movie that came out in wide release this past weekend. So let's move on into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to, or, I don't know, movies, TV, pop culture stuff of all sorts. I really should write like a better introduction for that.
Nah,
I could just
good.
Say the same thing every week.
It's
but
a regurgitation of media.
Yeah, basically. So, Tyler, what have you been consuming this week?
A couple of things, actually. A true couple of things. Two things. Gentlemen Broncos. Have you seen this film? Have you heard of this?
I have not seen it. I've heard of it. It's directed by, I believe, Jared Hess. Is that the same
yeah.
guy who did Nacho Libre?
And Napoleon Dynamite.
And Napoleon Dynamite. Okay, yeah. And I think it stars, Flight of the Conchords star Jemaine Clement?
Yeah, I have no actors or actresses' names prepared. So
okay.
you're correct as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
It's a really cool concept. There was only one aspect of the film that I didn't really enjoy that really turned me off. At one point he vomits and then a girl kisses him after he's vomited.
Oh, no.
And like that pure second was totally disgusting, and it really I almost threw up in my mouth. But everything else about this movie, it's very much like Napoleon Dynamite. I've seen Nacho Libre, but I don't remember it mm-hmm. at all. But it's very much in that same vein as Napoleon Dynamite, where it's very small town, very kind of out of date. You can't really date it. Very calm characters, like they're almost, just kind of lazy for being alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so this kid writes like really obscure science fiction novels. And so he writes one about his dead dad, and he goes to like a writing convention, and there's this really famous sci-fi writer there, and he really sells the movie because he's got like this almost like Thurston Howell III accent, where he's mm-hmm. like very, very nasally, but also very kind of rich sounding.
It was a Gilligan's Island reference for our younger viewers.
There you go.
Or listeners.
And he ends up like basically stealing this kid's novel because he's a struggling writer as well. And so the whole movie is kind of like this kid's writing the book, or he's written the book, and his friends try to make a movie about it,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of like steal the creativity of it. Like they kind of buy the story and then make it their own. So he's mm-hmm. kind of pissed about that. And then a book comes out from this author, which is basically the same story. And then the author is pissed off because they're making a movie about his book without his consent, even though he stole those ideas in the first place.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's very like that aspect of it is really cool. And there's of course subplots and all these kind of original characters. Mike White's in it from School of Rock. I don't know if you're familiar with him. And
mm-hmm.
Stifler's mom's in it.
Great.
Of two broke girls fame. And check this out. I mean, it's not on Instant. It was my last DVD before I took off the DVD plan.
Okay.
And I'm glad I closed with that one. It could have really been a letdown as last DVD.
Mm-hmm.
The DVD before it really pissed me off because it was Clash of the Titans, which I was really looking forward to watching. And I don't know if I told you about this.
No. Can I guess what happened?
Go ahead.
You were trying to watch the 2010 version and they sent you like the 1983 version or whatever?
No. That I would have probably been okay with.
Okay.
This was like 20 plus minutes of forced trailers and commercials before I could even access the menu to start the movie. And I got so pissed that I could not access the menu at all that I just took it out and mailed it back because like it was going on 20 minutes. I was sitting there and you couldn't skip forward or anything like that. It was just awful.
Wow.
And then I tried to like skip around like in the DVD, like if you open it in like a media player, you can kind of select the different
mm-hmm. things.
And it would just go back to like the first trailer they played, and I was like, I wasn't planning on watching the whole movie that night too, so if I had stopped like halfway through the movie, you know, in the VCR days you just push play and it starts exactly where it was. In this situation I would have had to watch like 20-30 minutes of trailers again just to start the movie right where I left off. So
who would have thought
that, whoever came up with that needs to like fatality death, Mortal Kombat style.
Who would have thought that we would have been lamenting the days of the VCR
right?
on here?
Like, please be kind, rewind. That was our only responsibility. Now they're forcing like trailers down our throat.
Yeah, man.
I mean, you pay money to get the DVD. Why do I have to watch commercials?
You're preaching to the choir, my friend.
The other thing I've been watching is on HBO, Life's Too Short, another Ricky Gervais production. Mm-hmm. I love this guy, apparently. He's actually decided not to do a season 4 of the Ricky Gervais Show, which I just talked about, so I'm pretty sure he listens to our show, because in my mind, he realized that because we mentioned his show on our podcast,
mm-hmm.
he's reached the pinnacle of popularity with that particular series.
Right.
And so he doesn't need to make a season 4 because his goals have been met. Do you see what I'm saying?
So we're indirectly directly responsible, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, people that like the Ricky Gervais show, but for Ricky Gervais, you're welcome.
Okay.
We love your show.
Right.
This is another... This actually has the little guy who plays Wicket in The Leprechaun. His name is, escaping me, Warwick Davis.
Oh, yes.
Life's Too Short. I talked to a couple people about this, and I laugh because he falls out of his car a lot as a little person,
mm-hmm.
and it's fairly hilarious. And people think I'm buying into this kind of making fun of little persons and things like that. And I mean, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of physical comedy, which of course is part of the humor, but there's also kind of a civil rights aspect to the show because he's like,
an advocate or something.
Yeah. He's an advocate. He's a member on the board for like rights for little persons and things like that. But he also owns like, he runs an agency for people and being in TV shows and movies and stuff. But whenever like requests come to his office, he takes it. Like he takes the roles. So he has like 6 or 7 people that are paying him to find them work, and he always takes the work. And there's special guest stars like Johnny Depp shows up at one point. Liam Neeson, I don't know if you saw that.
Oh yeah.
Where he comes in and tries to do stand-up comedy.
He was talking about cancer or something.
Yeah, he just keeps claiming he has AIDS and he got it from an African prostitute, Ricky Gervais. That's not really stand-up material. And so there's some really good aspects of that show. It's only 7 episodes in the first season, but I think they're bringing it back.
Cool.
Which is great because that's another good show on HBO. Right. So check that out.
Awesome. All right, well, speaking of good shows, I'll transition into what I was watching. Not actually a show, but a conversation with the cast of a show. The LA Film Festival is going on right now here in Los Angeles, and one of the coolest events, I think, that they are putting on this year was a conversation, or I'm sorry, it's called the Cooking a Contemporary Classic, A Conversation with Breaking Bad. So they had Vince Gilligan, the writer, director, producer, creator, showrunner of Breaking Bad, and pretty much the whole cast out there in LA in one of the theaters downtown just to talk about the show. It ran like an hour and a half or something. Very kind of free form. It was moderated by a local film critic who just asked kind of typical Q&A questions, nothing too revelatory. It was all very much like, oh yeah, we love great storytelling and, you know, a lot of kind of typical answers and stuff.
If you can't see me, Ben, I'm dismissively winking.
Right. Well, I don't know. I mean, if you've seen Breaking Bad, then you would know that why this would be exciting to attend. I was second.
No, I was talking about the questions, not the show.
Oh, right. Yeah, I mean, you know, despite the kind of middle-of-the-road questions, I think it was still a lot of fun for me because I'm a huge Breaking Bad fan, and we were, like, second row watching this thing. It was really cool to see. We actually met Aaron Paul afterwards, who plays Jesse Pinkman on the show. My girlfriend got a picture with him. He was really, really nice, very congenial and kind of gracious. All of the whole cast was really cool. Bryan Cranston was especially funny.
Like, give him a business card?
No, I didn't. I was kind of surprised at how funny Bryan Cranston was because I had never seen Malcolm in the Middle or any of the previous shows that he had been on. Walter White on Breaking Bad is like my introduction to Bryan Cranston as an actor.
Really?
But yeah, and I don't know.
He was Tim Watley in Seinfeld. He was the dentist, had converted to Judaism.
Oh, yeah.
And
wow.
Then he was also Mosby's boss when he was an architect in one of the seasons of How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, that's right. That's right. But
two.
I think I watched that season after I had started watching Breaking Bad. But in any case, pretty cool event. Just wanted to mention it, give a quick shout out to the LA Film Fest and Film Independent, the people who are putting it on. Awesome stuff. So Two movies that I also wanted to talk about. One of them is Rounders. Tyler, have you ever seen Rounders?
Is that the pool movie or the poker movie?
It's the poker one.
I think I have seen that.
Okay. So this movie stars Matt Damon and Edward Norton. Matt Damon. And what's his name? John Malkovich. So, Tyler, I know you and I had watched Pool Hall Junkies before. That's the pool one that you mentioned. That movie came out.
Yeah, where
they swim. No. That movie came out after Rounders and is essentially just a carbon copy of that movie where billiards or pool is the game as opposed to poker like it is here. I still have a little bit of love for Pool Hall Junkies, but I've got to say Rounders is a much better movie. It came out in 1998, so Matt Damon was fairly young in it. Still think he is like ridiculously charismatic. Edward Norton is one of those guys that you love to hate in this movie. John Malkovich gives like a really bizarre, almost like indecipherable performance at points where he's just like talking and you can barely understand what he's saying because his Russian accent is so thick. It's like comically thick. And I think the movie like simplifies things, the game of poker in particular, to a certain degree, but it also knows, like, the writers know what they're talking about. This isn't like something that always bothered me about Casino Royale, one of the recent Bond films, was like how easily everything comes across, and like, you know, of course Bond wins with like a pair of aces, and you know, just like, it's like the typical things that if you never played poker before,
right,
and you watch that, you're like, oh yeah, he's got to win because he's got this. But Rounders, right, like, it does a little bit of that, and but for the most,
like,
part,
he gets a royal flush.
Yeah, and
come on.
Like, the odds of that are just astronomical. But anyway,
the highest possible hand.
Yeah, and of course the guy that he beats has like the second highest thing. You know, it's just like, it's garbage, really.
Full spades, full house.
Yeah, it's like just middle of the road, kind of mainstream poker. And Rounders introduced America to the poker craze. I mean, this was a few years before the World Series of Poker really caught on as like a huge event. And I don't know if you remember, Tyler, but
Tilt,
when we were, the ESPN show Tilt, the short-lived series, one
Matador,
season.
Matador, damn you, Matador.
One and done. I
broke
actually,
my legs.
I really enjoyed that show when it was on. But,
I did too. When he smashed his legs in the stairwell, I was like, holy crap, this is on ESPN, people.
Yeah, that was, man, I kind of want to rewatch that show, actually.
I need to find that on DVD somewhere.
Yeah.
We can have the Matador on.
Michael Madsen, what a badass. But yeah, anyway,
I'll wait it to my retirement.
I think this movie did a good job at kind of introducing the world to this really, up until that point, relatively quiet culture, and doing a good job in kind of respecting the game as well as respecting the storytelling too. So if you guys haven't seen Rounders, it's available on Netflix Instant right now. Check it out. It's worth watching. The writers of this movie are now writing a new movie called Runner Runner that stars Ben Affleck and not Matt Damon, fellow Bostonite. Ben Affleck and Justin Timberlake are in it, and it's about online gambling instead of like straight up card playing. Physical real world card playing like Rounders is, but this is like an updated version.
I hope they're using those free chips that they give you, because otherwise you might lose a lot of money.
Well, that's the premise of the movie. Runner Runner is about Timberlake plays a Princeton student who is gambling online, and he ends up getting cheated out of his entire tuition money, and he like flies to Jamaica or whatever site or whatever island the website is being hosted from, and Ben Affleck is like the webmaster of this big operation and stuff, and Timberlake eventually becomes his like secondhand man, right hand man or whatever, and Anthony Mackie plays a FBI agent trying to hunt him down and stuff. I don't know, it sounds really interesting. So
yeah, I remember I was in college and they made a newspaper article of a kid that did that professionally. He like dropped out of school to just sit online all day and play poker.
Yeah,
and he lost like $100K one day. And he was just like, well, I'll just try again tomorrow. I'm like sitting on the bus because I didn't have enough money to buy a car. And I'm like, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. Well, that is, yeah, that's kind of depressing.
I hope he's poor right now.
Oh, man. You've got a kind heart, Tyler. Kind heart.
You know, I like him.
And then the last thing that I wanted to mention was All Dogs Go to Heaven. I watched that on Netflix instantly. Tyler, have you seen this movie?
I did, like 20 years ago.
Right, it came out in 1989.
I've also seen All Dogs Go to Heaven again.
Right, there is a sequel. I don't know why, but our good buddy Burt Reynolds, man of the mustache, Burt Reynolds.
The man of mustache May.
Right, voices one of the main characters in this movie. Dom DeLuise voices another main character. Charles Nelson Reilly is in it as well.
Can we hear a little bit of the New York Park Troll?
the
New York Park Troll.
Troll in Central Park.
Yeah, that was the SNL skit where Will Ferrell played inside the actor's studio.
Yeah,
and Alec Baldwin was playing Charles Nelson Reilly. He's like, can you give us a little bit of Troll in Central Park, the Troll King? And Alec Baldwin's just like, I'm the Troll King.
Anyway, I've got to say, if you guys have fond memories of All Dogs Go to Heaven from your childhoods or anything like that, this movie is terrifying. Should not be a kid's movie. I don't understand.
Demon dogs that try to eat them at one point?
What?
Aren't there, like, demon dogs that try to eat them at one point when they go to hell?
So, basically, like, the movie opens with Charlie and Itchy, voiced by Reynolds and Dom DeLuise. And they escape, like, a maximum security death row prison that's been created for them in New Orleans in 1930 or something. And because this has to be, like, a period piece for some reason. So they escape and
don't get cynical, Ben.
Dude, I'm just saying, this movie, there's no way that kids should be watching
this. It is a movie about dogs.
I'm just saying, dogs.
Wait,
humans,
are they dogs at this point?
They are dogs.
From a prison?
Yes, dogs escaping from the prison.
Okay.
People are shooting automatic weapons at them as they're leaving. They return to the site of their former partner's gambling establishment.
Wait, still dogs?
Oh yeah, dogs the whole time. They're always dogs. This is animated, by the way. Just throwing that out there too. There are dogs that are drinking, smoking, that like going crazy, straight up murdering people. Charlie gets murdered, goes to heaven in the first like whatever 20 minutes of the movie, and then proceeds to like work his way back into real life by cheating the system. And then
right,
I don't know if you remember, there's a scene where he wears this watch around his neck that's like linked to his life, and like if the time runs out or whatever, then he dies. So the angel dog that he was talking to up in heaven is like fading away on earth as he comes back, and he's like looking at this watch and she's like, you can never come back, Charlie.
Yeah.
Never ever come back. And it's like,
I remember that part.
My God, this is terrible. What is this guy gonna do? So anyway, he goes through this whole thing. There's a little girl that gets involved, whatever. I'm not really going to run through the whole plot. It's All Dogs Go to Freaking Heaven. But in any case, there are...
You seem pretty upset about it.
I kind of was, because the imagery is like...
Let's talk it out.
The imagery, it's shocking. Like, there, at one point, he has like this vivid nightmare where he just goes into hell and all of these demon monsters come up and just, start like attacking him and stuff. There's a part at the end where this giant alligator just straight up eats his nemesis. After singing randomly, this is a musical. I don't know why. I don't know. There's just a lot of like really kind of terrifying things in this movie, and stuff that like watching it now at age 26, I'm like, why would kids like this? Why would kids be like, oh yeah, let's watch All Dogs Go to Heaven? It's like terrible, horrible things happen in this movie. So
I think that's why I wanted to watch it, because I was so intrigued by the dementia of it all,
by the exploration of death.
Actually,
I don't know.
Unreasonably concerned about that when I was a child.
It's also just not a good movie. Like, the storytelling doesn't really make a lot of sense. Like, Charlie is a dick for the entire movie. He does.
Wait, you mean he's a dog?
Right, he is, but he is an ass. Not a donkey, a dog, but he's an ass.
You're confusing me here.
So
you're telling
anyway.
Me he's a pack mule?
So he, you know, like, the angel dog tells him there's nothing you can do to come back to heaven. You've screwed it up for yourself. And then he sacrifices his life for the little girl later on. And that's the right. only good thing that he does in this entire movie. Like, the little girl finds the nicest parents ever. She is, like, sickeningly adorable.
Yes.
She finds these surrogate parents who are willing to take her in. And Charlie,
adoptive,
like,
parents, not surrogate parents.
I guess so. They become a sort of surrogate parent. But yeah, adoptive parents is probably better. Anyway, Charlie, like, pulls her out of this great life because she has this ability to speak with animals. And Charlie and Itchy want to, like, fix a bunch of races that they
ghost
have.
Ghost animals, I believe. She can only talk to ghost animals.
No, she can talk to live animals. That's
oh,
the
really?
Thing.
Okay.
Yeah, because Charlie isn't technically a ghost. Like, he's returned to life. He's not actually,
okay.
like, floating around or anything. He's got his, like, skin and bones and everything. So I've talked about this movie way too much. I just I've realized I've gone too far with this. So All Dogs Go to Heaven.
All Dogs Go to Heaven.
It's terrible. And Charlie shouldn't have gone to heaven. Like, he cheated things and he saved the girl's life in the end. Yeah, great. But then, like, oh yeah, one good move gets you back in. I don't think so. Like, F this movie. So, yeah, there's that.
Well, yeah, there was some dark stuff back in the days. I'll tell you, like, Little Nemo and Slumberland. I remember there was some kind of some dark aspects to that.
Yeah.
I remember the pollution monster being pretty scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess they just don't make it easy anymore on these kids.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wonder if they backtalk so often.
I'm wondering if we're remembering those as being scarier than they actually were because we saw them when we were kids, or if they actually were, you know?
There's nothing really scary in SpongeBob.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I guarantee you we saw some pretty messed up things when we were like 5.
Yeah, All Good Dogs Go to Heaven is a perfect
example. Like our World War II.
All Dogs Go to Heaven is our World War II. Wow, that is
the movie right there.
That is, that is really reductive of one of history's worst.
Generalization.
Worst, yeah. Oh man. Okay. Well, you're obviously joking, so people can save the angry emails on that one, or actually just go ahead and send them to us anyway because we're looking for more emails. So notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Tell us what idiots we are. All right, with that, let's go ahead and move on into a review of Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Oh, jeez. Whoa, Jesus.
Did you see the way those guys looked at us?
Who wants to go skinny dipping?
No.
We got your friend!
They captured Allison!
Oh, it's the pancakes! You hate pancakes? I'll go make you something else.
What am I doing here?
You fell into the water. I dove in and rescued you.
We'll go find your friends. You should relax. Tucker and Dale are on the case.
What is this place?
It's just a cabin. It doesn't mean they're psycho killers.
Then why don't you go in there and talk to them?
All right. Maybe I will.
All right, so Tucker and Dale versus Evil. This movie came out in 2010. It was directed by Eli Craig, also written by him, and stars Alan Tudyk, Tyler Labine, and Katrina Bowden. Bowden? I don't know. Tyler, what did you think about this movie? This is the first time you'd seen it, right?
Correct. It just came out, right?
I think so, yeah. I mean,
it barely meets our Not Just New.
Right, that's correct.
Yeah, I checked it out, and I remember this coming out, actually, so I really dug the idea of, you know, you see your run-of-the-mill horror movies all the time, and this kind of had an interesting twist where it was almost like they were just falling into this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was pretty comical for, you know, along the lines of, like, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost vehicle, like,
yeah,
something that they would come up with. And, you know, after seeing Cabin in the Woods a couple of, months ago?
Yeah, I think so.
It's one of those where it takes the horror genre, the one we've seen 1,000 times, and kind of turns it on its head a little bit and just entertaining to watch, and so that's always a good thing with films. It's fairly gory. That's okay, but another one that came to mind was like Dead Snow, the one with the Nazi zombies back to life in Norway. Yeah, all those are, you know, kind of neo-teen horror kind of things that are fairly entertaining to watch.
Yeah, kind of like postmodern, where they know what the conventions are. They know how to, yeah, like you said, kind of turn on its head, flip it around a little bit, and give us something new that we haven't really seen before. And I think Cabin in the Woods is a great example of something else that does that in a little bit of a different way. I think Tucker and Dale is much more of like a kind of a straightforward comedy, as opposed to Cabin in the Woods, which has comedic moments, but is, I don't know, like dealing with the whole thing in a little bit more of a serious way. And Tucker and Dale is just much more of like a lighthearted thing. I really enjoyed this movie. I didn't really laugh a ton in it. I mean, there are funny things happening, but it's not like gut-busting laughter-inducing. Right. But
it's
kind
of real comedy. It's like real life. It's not cracking jokes all the time, but it's actually things you would say in the situation.
Yeah, and there's,
just
you know,
to be funny,
right? And there's also like the things that happen to them. Like you said, there is like a, that's a great comparison with the Simon Pegg and like the Edgar Wright type of thing. There's something, there's like stuff that goes on in this movie that feels like it actually could happen, and you know, like incidents that you would see in other movies are, don't really have much motivation behind them. Like, you never know why the deranged killer is coming after these people or something. Like, I mean, not never. I mean, obviously, in like Friday the 13th, which you can listen to our review of those first two movies on the episode of this podcast. They give you a little bit of backstory for that. But a lot of times, a lot of times these killers are just like faceless people that you don't really get that much of a look into their world, and this movie just concentrates mainly on those guys and kind of gives them a face. And it's like another one of these movies like Cabin in the Woods, where once you watch a movie like this, I don't think you can really watch any other kind of straightforward horror movie like that again without at least thinking about this movie or Cabin in the Woods, and kind of thinking about like what the mentality is of these guys on the other side, kind of. It's like The Other Guys, the action movie that Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg did, where it's like, this is a movie about the guys who get left behind in the office while the badass action star cops go out, like super cops go out and kind of do their thing. And it's like, what happens to these guys who are left behind? And Tucker and Dale versus Evil is like, what happens to these kind of misunderstood redneck guys who are like great guys, like just normal people who happen to be like, you know, a little bit kind of hillbilly or whatever.
Country boys.
Yeah, country boys.
Just a good old boys, if you will.
Just hanging out in West Virginia.
R.I.P. Waylon Jennings.
And
wait, he's not. He may not be dead.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't confirm.
John Schneider forever, though. In our
But yeah, I mean, I think this
movie was, what movie was he in that was featured on The Soup heavily recently? Was he in like Killer Croc or something?
John Schneider, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe like Jersey Shore Shark Attack or something.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Anyway, I need to watch whatever he was in recently.
In any case, yeah, I think I could easily recommend Tucker and Dale to everybody, especially people who have like a basic understanding of the horror genre and conventions and stuff. I feel like Cabin in the Woods, sorry to keep comparing these, I'll try to stop doing that after this one, I promise. That one like relies on a little bit more knowledge going in of like, there's like a Hellraiser.
Yeah, what? I was just about to say Hellraiser was in that.
Yeah, there's a Hellraiser reference. There's like, you need a little bit more of a kind of a wider grasp of the horror genre to understand all the little references peppered throughout Cabin in the Woods. But this one, Tucker and Dale, is a little bit more kind of simple and straightforward. And it has a lot of those comedic elements and a lot of references to other things. And it's just funny. And like the gore and stuff is funny. It's terrible and terrifying and in like a gross
that part where he just dive bombs into that wood chipper is hilarious.
Yeah.
And freaking Tucker turns around and just realizes it, and his reaction's really good too.
Yeah.
He's like, oh my god. He tries to help him out, and he's just kind of like getting stuck in there.
Yeah, and I always like stories where people are doing something and like the scenario around them gets so ridiculous that that when they have to explain the truth, like nobody believes them. I think that's kind of a fun storytelling device, and it's fun watching people watching all of these pieces fall into place for them to get to that point where they're like trying to talk to the cop and like explaining the scenario and telling him the truth. And he's like, you must think I'm some kind of a moron to believe that. And like, I mean, yeah, looking at it, kind of taking a step back, it doesn't really look great, but the movie does a great job of showing how this could actually be possible. Not necessarily in like a super realistic way, but in the world of the movie, I think it works really well.
Yeah. I like the idea that this, you know, everyone stereotypes the hillbillies as like stupid and, you know, unintelligent and stuff like that.
Yeah.
When they're like the two smartest in the movie, where they're just kind of like, they just don't like dealing with this kind of stuff that's going on. Like you said, it gets more and more ridiculous in their reactions. Like most of what I write or think is funny, at least, is regular people kind of getting put into a weird situation with weird people, and then not, you know, kind of like The Office, I guess, but not really to that boring extent.
Yeah.
But kind of like this, you know, like people reacting naturally to extraordinary things.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Doesn't
lead
into anything.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think, you know, throwing a normal person into any sort of extraordinary scenario is like a linchpin of all storytelling, I think.
Well, the ordinary person has to be funny, though.
Okay.
Or else it's not entertaining.
Okay.
Because otherwise they'd be, like, screaming the whole time instead of cracking jokes.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like John McClane in Die Hard.
Yeah, exactly.
Guy, extraordinary situation, but he's funny.
Yeah, and you can listen to...
He takes us on a little ride.
Can listen to our discussion of Die Hard in one of our previous
episodes.
Sure
can. Not Hudson Hawk, though. Don't watch that movie.
Die Hard and Die Hard 2. And Hudson Hawk, yeah. Man, a lot of Bruce Willis on this podcast. Let's talk about the asthmatic douchebag guy who was rocking the pop collar the whole time. What did you think about that character?
Yeah, you know, a general disdain, kind of like your Ed Norton description.
Yep.
From Rounders.
Mm-hmm.
Roundhall Junkies, whatever it was called.
Yes.
He's the character that, for some reason, is just completely driven by the fact that they're out to kill them, even though for no reason whatsoever, he's like just heated about this. And all the friends, it was kind of like a Lord of the Flies kind of thing, where the friends' refusal to listen to him, like their own consciences. Not consciousnesses,
right.
But consciences, kind of fell to the wayside because he pushed the issue so hard, and they eventually just became minions of his.
Yeah.
After a while, I thought that was fairly interesting, but yeah, his driving force was, you know, he was just insane. So there's really no explanation as to why he was doing certain things.
Well, I mean,
just crazy.
They gave the explanation near the end of the movie, but for a long time you didn't really know what was going on. And then once they did and kind of the Katrina Bowden's character plays like this psych major, a collegiate psych major, and she like sits down Dale and Chad on opposite ends of the table and has them like...
She's basically Britta.
Yeah, basically.
I think she knows a bunch of stuff about psychology.
So... Yeah, he reveals that like his parents were part of the Memorial Day massacre and all this kind of terrible stuff. So it gives you like a little bit of a sense of like how this guy has gotten to this crazy point. My thing is like he obviously wants to do it, like wants to be there, because like why would, if you know that your parents were involved in the Memorial Day massacre, why would you go to the same woods where it happened on Memorial Day 20 years later, unless you were looking for a fight or like some sort of way to deal with that problem? So, yeah.
A sane person would fear going back.
Right. Yeah.
I liked when Dale was just like, well, that wasn't me, man. I was like six back then. He goes, yeah, I know that, but like it was still your kind. And he's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I like how they race, like they hillbilly is a race or some type of
yeah.
some type of ethnicity or something like that.
Right, and then of course he's horrified to discover at the end that he is half hillbilly.
If that means anything.
Yeah, right.
but I still don't understand who his dad, the newspaper revelation. I didn't understand. So was one of the cops his dad?
No, I think
I didn't get it.
The cop thing was a little weird. I don't really know why they threw that in there. I think that was just the same cop that they had been dealing with, the one that died halfway through the movie or near the end. I think what they're trying to imply was Chad's father was the massacrist back in the day. He was the one who tortured his mom and all that stuff. And they said that because his mom was institutionalized and he heard the story from his grandmother growing up. So I think the grandmother just made up a story about how his real dad was there and he got burned in the fire and his body was never found because there was no real dad. It was just that guy either raped his mom and Chad was the result of it or whatever. Yeah, I know. Something terrible like that. So
that is not what I expected from this movie.
I know. I mean, it gets a little dark, but,
save that material for All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Yeah, seriously, dog rape. I'm surprised that wasn't in All Dogs Go to Heaven, but
dogs you raped, Charlie. You're going to hell.
The characters of Tucker and Dale I thought were really great, and the actors and stuff too. I mean, Alan Sodick and Tyler Labine, who I haven't really seen in much of anything. He was in that short-lived show on the CW called Reaper. Or Reapers or something that I
think Jenny Wade was in that show.
Oh, was she?
Maybe.
Yeah, that was airing, the pilot of that was airing while I was working at the CW back in, 07 or something.
Those days. You used to work fairly close with Amadeus.
No, I didn't. That's a local radio DJ for those of you who don't know who Amadeus is.
He used to host a pretty popular block of movies on Saturday afternoons.
anyway,
hours of 80s movies.
The point is, I really enjoyed the acting and the chemistry between the two male leads. I thought they did a great job. Did you agree with that, Tyler?
Oh yeah, this definitely needs a sequel. I need to see more Tucker and Dale.
Oh man, I didn't.
Tucker and Dale versus Evil Dead. Ooh.
Wow. For somebody who lives in a culture that kind of my job is writing about movies all the time, and there's so many sequels and stuff that come out. It's weird that I just didn't even really think about a sequel at all for this movie.
Well, most
while
of the
I was
time,
watching.
Ben, in the world we live in, sequels are kind of forced upon us, mm-hmm. even though we don't want to see Ryan Reynolds as Green Lantern ever again.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's recently been fired. but a lot of times it would be nice to actually see sequels to movies you do want to see sequels to.
Right.
That's just my take. Although, that E.T. sequel did not sound like something. Although, maybe something I would like to have seen, but I don't know. I still haven't decided on that yet.
Okay, all right.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, another thing I liked about this movie, we talked about it a little bit, just the kind of weird scenarios that they would get into where there would be kind of classic misunderstandings between everybody, the whole beehive fiasco where the kid's running through the woods and he impales himself. I think my favorite line in the movie was when the kids stumble across Dale and what is her name?
Tucker.
Allison, Allie, digging the hole for the outhouse. And they kind of peek around the bush, the brush or whatever, and they're like, "My God, that sick bastard! He's making her dig her own grave."
That's pretty funny.
It kind of looks like that from their point of view. The movie does a great job of giving a proper perspective for everybody and having the story look consistent all the way through from both parts of that perspective. So,
yeah, that was another thing I noticed. The same thing where it was like a split movie because when you looked at Tucker, when you were on Tucker and Dale's side, it was a comedy where they were kind of just getting into these weird situations. But then when you revert back to the teenagers, the college kids, it felt like a horror movie. Mm-hmm. They were legitimately in one, even though as an audience member, I believe that's called dramatic irony, even though there wasn't a real antagonist except for Pop Collar douchebag.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there wasn't, it was just kind of a misunderstood situation, but you kind of had the comedy aspect and then also the horror movie aspect.
Yeah, and then when they clash and when everybody finally gets to the cabin and they have that whole like psychoanalysis scene or whatever, like Chad and I don't remember one of the other like nameless girls that whose name doesn't matter comes in and she's like, wait, I think this is Stockholm syndrome. I think I've heard about this in a class or something, like, and because she, you know, Allie is just like, she's hung out with Dale enough to know that he's a good guy and he would never do anything like this. So, you know, that's just another example of the kind of the proper perspective in this movie. So I like what they did with it. I think, you know, it gets to a little bit of a message of like self-image and self-respect and stuff when Tucker is always trying to build up Dale and telling him he's better than he thinks he is. And like this girl isn't actually out of his league. He can pull her and all this kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, that whole not judging people before you get to know them.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of positivity in this movie, even though there's a lot of gruesome death. So,
yeah, because like in my situation, like most people like me initially, but then they meet me and they don't.
Wow. Okay. That is.
Yeah. Just kidding.
Okay.
I'm unlikable all around.
One of my biggest problems with this movie, if we can get into something negative here, is the handheld found footage opening at the beginning.
Yeah, it didn't make much sense.
It really didn't, because it shows a kid with half a face, like burned, you know, the other half burned off, and he swings and hits a journalist in the face, and then presumably kills the cameraman. And then he like looks at the camera, and then that's the opening of the movie. And it's like, man, you didn't need that, because you can just open the movie with the car driving down the road in West Virginia and introduce us to the kids. Because what that does by putting that little bookend, as it were,
made famous by The Quest,
right? Made famous Jean-Claude Van Damme movie The Quest. By putting that on the front end, You're waiting for it to close on the back end the whole time. And first of all, you never get that closure. You never see those people go into the house or whatever.
Right.
But at the same time, you do know in the back of your head, as you're watching these events play out, okay, one of these kids has to survive and get his face half burned off. So you know it's Chad McAsma douchebag, because he's the only one who looks like that kid, if you can remember
his traditional Polish name
that far back in the movie. You know it's him. So then when he and Dale are fighting in the sawmill and stuff at the end of the movie, you know that he's not going to die. And that takes away a lot of the drama of the movie, because part of the comedy and the drama, the suspense and stuff in this film is like, these kids die in like ludicrous ways. Like the one girl gets her face
whacked off.
Yeah, like what is it called? Like
a weed whacker.
Yeah, weed whacker. Weed whacked off. So that's ridiculous. Like that's a crazy death, but it kind of, you know, it's surprising. It takes you by surprise. You don't really see it coming, because all this stuff happens so quickly. All these deaths, like the kid's just running through the woods, bam, all of a sudden he's impaled by like a 15-foot stake sticking out of the ground. So like if the movie didn't open with that handheld found footage thing, you might think, okay, Chad is going to die in some sort of comical but probably really gruesome way at any given second, and it would make you kind of on the edge of your seat, like, oh, what's going on? But you know he's going to survive, especially after he looks like he gets like a mohawk for some reason when his hair gets burned, and he's like disgusting. He looks like Two-Face or something. And you know, okay, without a doubt, now Chad is the guy in the beginning whose face was burned off. So you know for a fact that he survives, because we haven't seen those investigative journalists yet. So I don't know. I just thought that was like a really kind of a terrible plot device and like really unnecessary to the drama of the movie. So aside from that, I mean, I don't really have too many qualms with the movie. I liked it a lot, and I just don't know why they decided to do that at the beginning. But
I didn't understand that either.
If
you're gonna bookend it, bookend it.
Yeah, seriously, give us close that book, or at least go back to a crowded bar and have the old man finish telling the story or something.
Yeah, you finish telling the story in flashback form, and then you close the book on it. That's a proper bookend right there.
As seen in The Quest.
So. Bookend on a bookend. Only thing The Quest was missing was when they opened the book at the beginning. That does not happen. So it's actually bookend, film, bookend, bookend.
Right.
Which is still, it's still okay. The books stand up. No problem there.
It's just got a little extra support on the back.
It still supports the movie. Just got, yeah, exactly, that extra support on the back.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that pretty much brings a lot of my talking points to an end anyway. We covered a lot of the stuff I wanted to mention. Do we have anything else that you wanted to get to that we didn't cover?
No, not really.
Okay. Yeah, why don't you give some concluding thoughts then on Tucker and Dale vs. Evil?
It's on Instant Watch if you like The Evil Dead, if you like Simon Pegg movies, if you like Dead Snow, the Norwegian classic taking place literally in dead snow. Check out Tucker and Dale Must Die. I mean, Tucker and Dale vs. Evil Dead. I mean, Tucker and Dale vs. Evil.
Is that a John Tucker Must Die reference?
Maybe. Tucker and Dale Must Die. That sounds like a good sequel title, too.
It does. That actually...
Tucker and Dale vs. Machete would be even better.
I don't know how well those worlds would coexist.
I could go on all day. All day.
Yeah, you could. I agree. I think there's a lot of great comedy in here. While it's not like laugh out loud funny for the most part, there are some really awesome moments. Definitely worth your time, especially if you have a tiny grasp on the horror genre. And yeah, a lot of fun, great acting by the leads, very charismatic. And I agree, Tyler. I actually do want to see a sequel to this one. So
here's another sequel idea, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Tucker and Dale vs. Chip. How's that for you? Dale's character is actually replaced by the chipmunk Dale, and it's just Tucker and Dale versus Chip.
Chip, oh man, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. That's what you're
exactly.
That's what you're getting at. Jeez.
Yeah.
Man, this
Chip and Dale.
You're like living in 1991 Rangers. Right now. You're referencing Shaq and Crunch Bars. You're talking about Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers.
That's just the mood I'm in. That's what happens during late night podcasting.
There you go.
I'm getting set to go up on my ship of dreams, and to prepare for that, I usually just reimagine my days back in the 1990s.
Awesome. All right. Well, why don't you rev up the old Apple II and see if it can give us something that's actually on Netflix Watch instantly this time.
You darn Apple II. Got to program you better. Yeah, let me pull that huge lever, and we'll see what the Apple II may or may not have available for us next week. All right, we'll be watching Presumed Innocent with Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of sounds like a Fugitive ripoff, but I don't think it is.
Okay.
Really wish we were watching Witness. That's a hell of a movie right there, but we'll be watching Presumed Innocent.
Okay.
I believe he might actually be presumed guilty. Wait and find out.
Yeah, that's a good of a cliffhanger as I've heard in a little while. So
we're not watching Cliffhanger, Ben. Don't bring up the hopes too high. 1990s reference.
Oh, man. All right, so we do have one email that we want to mention this week. You guys can email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. Let us know what you thought of Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Let us know what you think about any of the movies that we've talked about in the
you
history.
You have an email?
This podcast. Yeah, it's a really great email. It's from Nokia Mobile, and it says, "Congratulations, kindly download attachment." So that's got to be a virus of some sort, and I'm not.
That is totally a virus.
Not going to do it, but thanks for the email, Nokia.
Maybe it was actually a free ringtone for those old Nokia phones that we all used to have.
Oh, man.
Remember when Panther made his own, like, his own recipe ringtone?
I do. I remember exactly what it sounds like, actually.
Why don't you give us a little sample?
Okay, it sounded like this. That's pretty spot on.
I like how it gets fast right at the end. Like,
yeah, it's because...
He's like, man, I better close this up.
It's because you were able to choose, like, the length and time and notes and stuff that you could use.
Right.
And he, by the end, he had no idea what he was doing. So he just, like, tapped a bunch of things really quick. But I don't know
Give it to us one more time, Ben.
No, I'm done. Okay. People can turn my vocal reinterpretation of that into their own ringtones if they want to get really meta. So
that is a $1 million idea if I've ever heard one.
Indeed. All right. Well, speaking of $1 million, I don't know. That doesn't make any sense as a transition at all.
Am I going to win that for the character name game?
Yeah. Why don't we finish the character name game? This is the character's name was Blake. If you can
collateral.
No, it's not collateral. It is the, I'm guessing you're basing that guess off of Rock of Ages, the Tom Cruise movie that's out in theaters right now.
I do not recognize that film, Ben.
Rock of Ages is the movie that I'm pulling from here for the reference, but it's not Tom Cruise's character. It's not a Tom Cruise character. It's somebody
is
else.
Glengarry Glen Ross?
It is Glengarry Glen Ross. That's right. Alec Baldwin plays Blake.
16-minute Academy Award-nominated scene.
Yes, I believe that is correct. Man, that is such a good scene, too. Like, I watch it sometimes if I just want to see, like, a verbal beatdown because he goes off on those dudes.
You want to know how to buy this watch?
I like when somebody's like, "What's your name?" And he's like, "What?" And he's like, "My name? F you! That's my name!" The best line.
You need to embed that at the end of this episode. Just include the 16-minute scene as the closer.
Should I? All 16 minutes?
Either that or just put it in a YouTube video at the bottom of the post.
Yeah, I'll link to it. That sounds better.
Kind of ridiculous, 16 minutes.
Okay, all right.
Plus, we might get stamped with a lawsuit.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
No, freaking Jack Lemmon needs to make his money off that.
Yeah, or else he'll turn into Larry Hagman.
My accountant thinks so.
Bringing it all the way back around. All right. Well, why don't we keep that back and forth going and just tell people where they can find more work from us on the internet. So, Tyler, let's start with you.
I've got solarsentinel.blogspot.com. I might have a little story up there soon rather than later called Batman Ghosts Among Us.
Ooh.
It's actually the sequel to A Winter's Night. Which is actually a sequel to a Dark Knight, or The Dark Knight.
Which takes place in the Christopher Nolan Batman universe, right?
Unfortunately, yes. Okay. It's so popular, I figured, hey, why don't I just write stories that exist in the Nolan universe, and then people will read them? Ironically enough, no one read it. So I made a sequel to it, and I basically took all of Nolan's stuff, kind of did something in A Winter's Night, and now I'm just back to, like, I basically bring in the Adam West Batman to replace Christian Bale. And there's some crazy twists.
How amazing would The Dark Knight Rises be if Adam West was suddenly Batman again?
Like, he goes to Arkham to check up on the Joker. You're expecting like a Heath Ledger stand-in. It's just a Cesar Romero hologram. Oh my god,
awesome. Well, you guys can find more of my work I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing at geektyrant.com, firstshowing.net, filmonic.com, and notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast. We also didn't mention that you can find Tyler running the Twitter account for the Not Just New Movies podcast at NJNMPodcast on Twitter. So converse with him. Do your thing there. That would be great. Shoot us an email. Leave us a voicemail, all that stuff. Also, if you guys want to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, it's free. Do that. Leave us a review. We had a little iTunes fiasco a few months ago. I'm sure longtime listeners are sick of hearing me talk about this. But
we still haven't recovered from it, though.
We really haven't. It was like the most detrimental thing to happen to the podcast in its existence. So if you guys are streaming this from Geek Tyrant or Not Just New Movies right now and you want to subscribe, that'd be great. Just go to iTunes, the iTunes store, and type in Geek Tyrant -NJNM. Subscribe to the
feed. Or you
can
just click on that little iTunes logo right below the player.
Yeah, there you go.
Right there, people.
That's on Not Just New Movies. I can't really embed that at Geek Tyrant properly. But in any case.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode. We will be watching Presumed Innocent starring Harrison Ford for next week. And hopefully we'll try to get a guest to come on and join us for that one. Don't hold your breath for Harrison Ford. I hear he's pretty busy these days. But
yeah, that's true.
And music for this episode will come courtesy of the Tucker and Dale vs. Evil soundtrack, if I can find two songs. I might actually open this one with dueling banjos, but if you're listening to this, then you've already heard that. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you guys next week.